Greetings, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. You're here with me, LaVon. Thanks for joining me on a program. We're happy to be here on UCY.TV Monday through Friday. We are broadcasting live 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, pretty much Monday through Friday, maybe more. We'll see how it goes. So I'm really amazed with humanity. In honor of Black Friday, we maintained our consistency of inconsistency towards freedom. We trampled each other. We successfully consumed on point, on target, just as expected. And I think even someone died this year. I'm so proud of you humans. I'm so proud. So in honor of Black Friday, in the typical anti-media fashion, I'm going to be reading to you guys something that is completely opposite about what is typical today on Black Friday. And we're going to read about a topic called panarchy, anarchy without adjectives. Very happy to be sharing with you beautiful words of constructed wisdom and thought by John Vibes and Derek Rose. This book is called The Conscious Resistance, Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality. I've been recording the Even chapters as an audiobook for you guys, and it's very inspiring, and it's a beautiful book. You guys can actually download it if you go to The Conscious Resistance. Just look it up, and I'm pretty sure you can get it in its entirety. But if you'd rather hear me read it to you, get comfortable, because you're going to hear it. I'm not taking any calls tonight because that's how important these words are to me. So let me get some water and we're going to get started. But if you guys really, really want to chat, you guys can send me some messages and we can have conversation that way, okay? And I'm happy to have my voice back. I got sick. I know you're surprised, but it happens to us all. Some tips so you don't get sick real quick. Colloidal silver, our sovereign silver, natural antibiotic, black elderberries. They also boost your immune system. You want to drink some pH balanced water, but not too much. You can check your acidity levels in the morning by getting a pH test strip kit and just check your first urine of the morning and then kind of gauge from there how much water you need. But you don't need to take drugs to get better. You just got to support your immune system. And that's what I did. And the most important thing is sleep, because your body prepares itself then. So I got lots of sleep, drink lots of water, and I have a voice. Woo! So I'm going to use it to share with you guys these awesome words from Derek Bros and John Vibes. So this is chapter 4. The title is Towards Panarchy, Anarchy Without Adjectives. And they begin by saying, although anarchy is one of the most maligned and misunderstood words in English language, we are going to use a very simple definition that gets straight to the point for the purpose of this conversation. Simply put, anarchy is a social arrangement in which there are no rulers. A ruler is defined as a person who claims unwanted authority over another life. Sadly, there cannot be a master without a slave, and by the nature of the relationship, the slave is physically and morally obligated to obey the commands of the master. Many people believe this relationship is the stitch that holds the fabric of civilized society together, while in reality, nothing has caused more pain and more suffering in this world than the corrupt authority and the concept of rulers and slaves. So you may ask yourself how this pertains to you, but the sure notion of what our great nation partook in this day, right after the day of being thankful, quote unquote, for genocide, we go in, we basically support our rulers by giving them our dollars. If you understand that you trade your life for those dollars, you're essentially giving them your life for what? Stuff. Okay? Just ponder that. Here we go. These social relationships are the manifestations of the internal struggles that exist within us. These relationships between rulers and slaves, kings and subjects, and even presidents and citizens do not exist in reality. They are mental constructs which allow some people to harm and take advantage of others in the open while maintaining moral support superiority. This is far more dangerous than the relationship of a common criminal to his victims. When someone attacks from a position of authority with moral justification, his crimes will go unpunished and his power will be amplified as a result. This is why police brutality and government corruption have been a problem since before ancient Rome. The relationship of authority breeds and encourages corruption. That being said, to achieve anarchy or the abolition of masters and slaves, the solution is far more complicated than simply having a revolution and taking on the current establishment in physical combat. Though some argue that this will be part of the process. This has been attempted many times before, and each time power has shifted hands, but the cycle of violence and slavery has continued. This cycle has been in constant repetition throughout the generations. While power has shifted hands over time, and very little has actually changed about how our species views the world, how we view one another, or how we view ourselves as individuals. This is by no mistake. Mountains of propaganda have been released over the centuries to reinforce the old ways and to keep people from thinking outside of the box. Luckily, there were a number of brave philosophers who recognized this dynamic and worked to construct a philosophy of anti-authoritarianism, which came to be known as anarchism. Later, we will explore the anarchist themes writing of Lao Tzu from back in the 6th century. There are those who believe Christ was the first anarchist. William Godwin, a writer in France during the 1790s, is said to have been the first philosophical anarchist with his book Political Justice. The first person to publicly proclaim himself as an anarchist was Pierre Joseph Proudhon with the publication of his seminal work What is Property in 1840. Around that time in America, anarchism was taking roots in the abolition movement. Many abolitionists recognized that slavery and government were essentially the same thing, and that slavery will exist in one form or another as long as the government exists. One of the main pioneers in American anarchist thought was outspoken entrepreneur and abolitionist. Lysander Spooner, I love saying his name. Unlike many other anarchist philosophers in Europe, Spooner's breed of anarchism was strictly individualistic, with a strong emphasis on market and property rights. Spooner was also very critical of collectivist ideas like democracy and constitutionalism. So his work was heavily focused on deconstructing these concepts and showing them as deceptive forms of oppression. What a concept. Indeed. So Spooner thought of a way to put his philosophy into action by creating his own business that would directly compete with government services. One of his most groundbreaking entrepreneurial achievements was forming the American Letter Company, a letter and package delivery business that competed with the U.S. Postal Service. And prove that we don't need the government to deliver mail. Hundreds of years later, this strategy was identified by Samuel Edward Konkin III as agorism, a philosophy of non-compliance that uses underground markets as a means of making this state obsolete. We will be exploring the potential of agorism throughout this book. That is my favorite part of this book. That's why I highly recommend that you guys read it. It's super empowering. So, as many other popular schools of thought, anarchism has evolved and even splintered off over the years in various directions. creating a number of subsects within the philosophy. In the 1870s, Europe saw a great divide between anarcho-communists and anarcho-collectivists. Around the same time, American anarchists were debating the pros and cons of individualist and communist anarchist thought. As a result, anarchist philosophers in Europe and America began calling for anarchism without objectives, which was essentially an acceptance of all those who believe in self-governance and lack of coercion, regardless of their particular economic solution. So more recently, libertarian activist and writer Carl Hess discussed the need for what he called anarchism without hyphens. Hess was well known for working in and out of political circles with anarchists on the left and the right. In 1980, he outlined his argument for anarchy without hyphens. There's only one kind of anarchist, not two, just one. An anarchist, the only kind, as defined by the long tradition and literature of the position itself, is a person in opposition to authority imposed through the hierarchical power of the state. The only expansion of this that seems to be me to be more reasonable is to say that an anarchist stands in opposition to any imposed authority. An anarchist is a voluntarist. Now, beyond that, anarchists also are people and, as such, contain the billion-faceted varieties of human reference. Some are anarchists who march voluntarily to the cross of Christ. Some are anarchists who flock voluntarily to the communities of beloved, inspirational father figures. Some are anarchists who seek to establish the syndics of voluntary industrial production. Some are anarchists who voluntarily seek to establish the world production of the kabuzum. Some are anarchists who voluntarily seek to disestablish everything, including their own association with other people, the hermits. Some are anarchists who deal voluntarily only in gold, who will never cooperate, and who swirl their capes. Some are anarchists who voluntarily worship the sun and its energy, build domes, eat only vegetables, and play in the Dulcimer. Some are anarchists who worship the power of algorithms, play strange games, and infiltrate strange temples. Some are anarchists who only see the stars. Some are anarchists who only see the mud. They spring from a single seed, no mattering the flower of their ideas. The seed is liberty, and that is all it is. It is not a socialist seed. It is not a capitalist seed. It is not a mystical seed. It is not a determinist seed. It is simply a statement. We can be free. After that is all choice and chance. Anarchism, liberty, does not tell you a thing about how free people will behave or what arrangements they will make. It simply says that people have the capacity to make arrangements. Anarchism is not normative. It does not say how to be free. It says only that freedom, liberty, can exist. We understand that because of its anti-capitalist roots, many anarchist thinkers on the left might say that anarchism without adjectives or hyphens remains anti-capitalist, and thus schools of thought like anarcho-capitalism should be excluded. On the other hand, there are many market anarchists and anarcho-capitalists that point to the corrosion that is inherent in democracy and socialism, showing that these ideas are essentially nothing more than government. In short, there is a great deal of debate about who is a real anarchist and who isn't among anarcho-capitalists and anarcho-communists. There is truth to both of these viewpoints. Although market activity is peaceful and voluntary, the social system that has traditionally been called capitalism is far from free and voluntary market. Capitalism has used state power as its primary mechanism of operation. So it is not fair to associate this term with a free and open market. Likewise, most traditional democratic and socialist societies have been ruled by very few rich people, despite the notion that these philosophies are exercised for and by the common people. Even the more egalitarian democratic societies sometimes fall victim to the tyranny of the majority and citizens are forced to live at the whim of their neighbors and change their lives because a voice was held somewhere. I'm sorry, it's a little dark in here. Because a vote was held somewhere. Capitalism, communism, and socialism are all loaded terms that have so many different definitions to different people that they are nearly impossible to communicate about. There is no hope in saving or reclaiming any of these words. They have been tainted by state influence for generations, searing their assumed definitions into the minds of billions of people. I couldn't agree with that more, which is why I find it really important to share this with you guys. Time for a drink, though. Hold on 1 second. First time I ever did my show, I forgot water. It's frozen. Never again. Okay. So, in advocating for an entirely new and different way of life, using the names of old social systems and old ways of doing things seem counterproductive. Of course, there's value in bringing the old terms into the conversation for the sake of comparison, but social philosophies by the names of capitalism and socialism have been around for centuries and have been government-based economic systems. For us, the definition given by Kevin Carson, the author of The Iron Fist of the Invisible Hand, corporate capitalism as a state-guaranteed system of privilege best defines how capitalism has manifested over the centuries. Industrial capitalism, to the same extent as manorialism or slavery, was founded on force, like its predecessors. Capitalism could not have survived at any point in its history without state intervention. Coercive state measures at every step have denied workers access to capital. Let's see here. Have denied workers access to capital, forced them to sell their labors in a buyer's market, and protected the centers of economic power from the dangers of the free market. To quote Benjamin Tucker again, landlords and capitalists cannot extract surplus value from labor without the help of the state. The modern worker, like the slave or the serf, is the victim of ongoing robbery. He works in an enterprise built from past stolen labor. In the sense that we are against crony capitalism or the subsidizing and protection of business interactions by the state, this is, of course, because state require force and theft to maintain control. On the other hand, we are also against involuntary democracy and forced socialism, where people are forced into association with others because they happen to share the same geography. Many pioneers of the anarcho-capitalist philosophy have made strong arguments for the importance and morality of markets, property, and trade, bringing a new perspective to the governing culture of anarchism. Economist Murray Rothbard coined the term anarcho-capitalism in 1949 or 1950. Rothbard's writing on banking, property rights, and the history of war was groundbreaking and highly academic, but he did not have the same knack for public relations and marketing as he did for economics and history. Rothbard had some incredible ideas, but he took the two most hated words in the English language and put them together, which sometimes makes a philosophy a hard sell. Rothbard also made several strategic mistakes throughout his career, namely teaming up with politicians and Washington lobbyists in hopes of changing the system from the inside. Rothbard's work was built primarily upon the work of Ludwig von Mises, the founder of what came to be known as the Austrian School of Economics. Mises was not explicitly an anarchist, and he too had no problem forming alliances with aristocrats and politicians. However, The work he did throughout his life explained exactly how market activity could make the state obsolete. Rothbard later applied these ideas to his anarchist philosophy. Today, there are many anarcho-capitalists, economists of all varieties devoting years of research towards developing stateless solutions and voluntary ways to provide goods, services, and charity. Meanwhile, there are many mutualists and anarcho-syndicalists who are working to tackle some of the pre-existing state influences that create widespread inequality in our world. The subject of property is one of the most contentious topics among anarchists on different varieties. We feel that there's something to learn when considering each side of this debate. Anarchists who oppose the concept of owning property often point to the government enforcement of property titles and the huge disparity of land ownership in the world, and argue that property is a tool of oppression. They make valid points about how there is a need to reconsider how to deal with property in a free society, but they do not adequately make the case for ruling out property as a concept altogether. In today's economic atmosphere, property rights have a somewhat negative stigma due to the offensive amount of government-protected land and the resources that have been acquired throughout force, theft, fraud, and coercion. This is an understandable objection, but since the property was illegitimately acquired, it should be legally considered stolen property, America. This insane amount of land that is unjustly owned by the royal families and governments of the world create the illusion of a scarcity of land where there is actually an abundance. It is virtually impossible for such small groups of people to control and maintain such large areas of land unless they have a legal monopoly on the use of force. The problems in wealth disparity that we see today do not indicate a problem with property rights. They indicate that property rights have been systematically abused. The fact that the aristocracy unjustly controls this land today shows that mass reparations and restitution are in order. This is no case for the abolishment of property rights, but is often used as such. Just because the government has monopolized the currency and centralized the trading structures does not mean that economics is a construct of government. Quite the opposite is true. The economy functions very much in spite of government. We would be able to create a world of abundance if it weren't for government intervening to prop up affiliated businesses and stomp out competition. It's a very powerful statement. The concept of homesteading is The concept of homesteading is the one area of common ground between anarchists who disagree on the subject of property. According to direct homesteading, property belongs to whoever is living in or making use of a particular piece of land or property. Claiming large areas of land by planting flags or drawing lines on a map is not a legitimate way to keep homestead property. This is a very important concept because it keeps illegitimate landlords from using property as a tool of oppression. If homesteading had been applied to slave plantations in colonial America, the slaves would technically be considered part owners of the plantation, or each would own an individual piece of the plantation because they were the ones physically living and working on the land. Despite the many differences between the various anarchist philosophies, there is actually a lot of common ground to explore. If each side would only engage in polite conversations on the issue at hand, for example, a great opportunity exists in studying the similarities between the philosophies of agorism and mutualism. Mutualism is a school of thought that seeks to give individuals, rather than the state, control over a piece of the means of production. In the practicability of mutualism, Clarence Lee Schwartz writes, "Mutualism is a social system based on reciprocal and non-invasive relations among free individuals. The mutualist standards are individual, equal freedom for each without invasion of others, economic, untrammeled reciprocity, freedom of exchange and contract without monopoly or privilege. It is social, complete freedom of voluntary associations without coercive organization. mutualist economies might manifest as mutual credit banks or labor-owned cooperative farms. Agorism is a philosophy of creating alternative institutions to directly compete with the state. Samuel Konkin III outlined the strategy with the concept of counter-economics, which is our participation in economic activity that is typically seen as illegal by the state. This is where it gets really exciting. This includes competing currencies like Bitcoin, community garden schemes, tax resistance, and operating a business without a license. Agorism also extends to the creation of alternative education programs, free schools or skill shares, and independent media ventures, like the anti-media or like UCY Radio. How exciting. Also, essential to agorism is support of entrepreneurs who actively do business outside of the state's license and regulations. We're doing it right now, guys. The Agorist Mutualist Alliance represents an opportunity for anarchists of all stripes to focus on common ground and build institutions that can help us live free now. Both philosophies reject non-defensive violence, politics, and monopolies. Both philosophies do not wish to use the force of state or some dictatorship of the proletariat. To meet their goals. Both philosophies support the experimentation of a variety of communities, working outside the state to create institutions that give our brothers and sisters who still remain in the state's grasp another option, generated outside the corporate state monopoly. It is important to note that the idea of creating alternative institutions does not end at the economy. We could do well to support alternative forms of food production, community defense, education, government, media, and open source technologies as well, all of which give the people a choice that extends outside of the state and weakens its power over time. There is value in all anti-authoritarian literature and philosophy, though each side of the argument also has plenty of blind spots. That being said, we believe in panarchy, or acceptance of all individuals' sovereignty and their possible economic solutions, as long as they are absent of force. This would allow for all individuals who claim their right to self-governance and seek the absence of coercion to break free from the state with other free humans with similar goals. We choose to find common ground with other anarchists to move past the state and then allow for free experimentation of all communities and all economies. Sounds like heaven. Furthermore, it is important to encourage everyone to accept the idea that people do not need to be forced into associations and relationships with one another because they happen to live in the same area. In some circumstances, it may be necessary to migrate to the same area to create a commune or a type of protected community. However, as long as it is logistically possible for people to arrange themselves peacefully in the same geographical region, they should still be able to subscribe to different views on economics, spirituality, or any other controversial topic that divides people politically. The only common thread that need tie communities together is the mutual belief that they have no right to force their beliefs on anyone else. Voluntarism is the idea of mutual non-aggression. You may notice us refer to this term throughout this book. On the surface, voluntarism is just another word for anarchism. However, it denotes some very specific philosophical principles that make the definition of anarchism a step further, that take it a step further. A voluntarist does not only believe in a world without rulers and slaves, but also advocates for society built on a culture of peace, non-aggression, and a general live and let live atmosphere. The voluntarist newsletter has defined the philosophy in the following way. Voluntarists are advocates of non-political, non-violent strategies to achieve a free society. We reject electoral politics, in theory and in practice, as incompatible with libertarian principles. Governments must cloak their actions in an aura of moral legitimacy in order to sustain their power, and political methods invariably strengthen that legitimacy. Voluntarists seek instead to delegitimize the state through education, and we advocate withdrawal of the cooperation and tacit consent on which state power ultimately depends. When exposed to this philosophy for the first time, people often ask for proof of its validity. We are conditioned to having our worldview grafted by sacred tomes written by long-dead authority or hero figures. This is not how freedom works. Waiting to be told what to do by a self-interested authority will never lead to a peaceful society. As we have briefly discussed in this chapter, the philosophy of freedom is a giant web of dissenting viewpoints that has constantly evolved over generations. There is no ultimate authority on what freedom should or will look like. It is important to remember that these are merely a collection of ideas spread by brave individuals who dare to think differently and stand against the slavery of their times. However, just because there is no proof and no official doctrine, the principles of voluntarism are self-evident in human behavior, human desire, human history, and most likely in the animal kingdom. The vast majority of human beings desire peace. Even the nasty people in the world desire peace for themselves, if not for others. The vast majority of people who want peace and freedom from harm are obligated to allow the same for others. In other words, by placing the expectation of peacefulness on others, you are automatically accepting the obligation not to harm them. Furthermore, if you harm or threaten another person, you are breaking your end of the bargain and forfeiting your own right for peace, allowing the moral right to use defensive force against your attacks. These expectations and obligations will, of course, be broken from time to time, even in a free society. However, the random violence in a free society is manageable on a case-by-case basis, while systematic violence in today's world, operating under the color of law and false moral superiority, is far more dangerous because it goes unquestioned. Also, when these obligations are broken, the injured or threatened party is morally justified to defending themselves with force if necessary. Various researchers and economists have studied how things are handled when these rules are broken, and a number of possible solutions have been suggested. Although these are just predicted solutions, the real solutions will come when millions of minds start working together on these issues and solving problems that stand in their path. It is through this process of spontaneous order that brilliant solutions will be pulled from the human consciousness. While the term voluntarism is only a recent development in the language of freedom, the philosophy that it embodies is age old. As we explore in later chapters, many of the world's ancient teachings hold this philosophy as their key value. Buddha is quoted as saying, "The wise harm no one. They are masters of their bodies, and they go to the boundless country beyond sorrow." In the early teachings of Christianity, these ideas came in the form of the Golden Rule. Do to others as you would have them do to you. In Islam, there is La ikrah fi din, or no compulsion in religion. This philosophy runs deep through many of the world's ancient teachings. In a religion of voluntarism, anarcho-communists, anarcho-capitalists, Muslims, Christians, and free people of all varieties would live among one another or within a very close geographical distance, with very few issues. Neither side would imagine they have the moral right to force or threat against people who did them no harm. In the rare case that no one could stand each other, they would not hurt one another as long as they still lived according to voluntarist principles, but would instead freely disassociate and keep to themselves. This possibility is mentioned because a free society would not be a utopia, although it may appear to be when compared to what we see today, because there would be no such thing as morally justified violence except in defense of one's own liberty. The root of many traumas, pain and suffering that the human family has both inflicted and endured is almost always morally justified by violence. Human sacrifice, genocide, torture, arranged marriages, and all forms of slavery are examples of morally justified violence. Violence that someone in authority either allowed or enforced. If we want to affect long-lasting change as freedom seekers, we must challenge the very nature of morally justified violence instead of analyzing the person on the throne and policies that they make. Whew. So if you guys are wondering what I am saying, what I am doing, if you're just joining, I'm happy to be reading to you guys some words from the Conscious Resistance, Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality. In honor of the program on Friday nights, I try and balance out the news with practical things and philosophies and ideas that we can take into our everyday lives and practice as individuals. Because I like to teach you guys that you have power. You're not just this aimless tissue, bones walking around. You have power. And John Vives and Derek Rose taught us about the history of anarchy. They defined the use of the words and taught us that we've got to start thinking in a more forward fashion if we wish to change things. Which reminds me of something Albert Einstein says, and that is, you can't solve problems within the same frame of mind in which they were created. And it's true. And the most powerful way that the most prolific teachers have taught us to do such a thing, to live in a quote-unquote free society, starts internally. And that's always been the message of this program, and it always will be. And I kind of want to get back to my roots here of have some reflections with you guys about how powerful beings can be. If you remember, one of the first programs we ever had was we broke down the psyche of the human and what does it mean to ponder and where do your thoughts come from and what does that mean? What does that even mean? And something I'd like to remind you of is we're all connected. We are all connected. Maybe you can't see it physically, but on a vibrational level, just the way that our universe is constructed. Science has proven that thoughts are vibrations, and you're nothing but a composure of vibrations because your brain, your computer, thing that governs your body, consists of these vibrations. It creates them inside your brain, and it literally sends little balls of light down your neural pathways to communicate to the aspects of you. And every thought that is elicited or grown within your mind becomes an aspect of you. So that power alone is something that is to be perpetuated and honored and remembered, because I know this, but I forget, because this world is tough. And because we're all coexisting together, we are all reflections of one another. And even if you have this profound truth and understanding of self and you know this power within you, you can't always practice it because you're surrounded by people who don't practice it. So we forget and we allow others to impact us because they do. But that's where your power comes in as well. Not only do you control the thoughts within you, but you can control how you react to the uncontrollable thoughts that occur within others. And this is my life meditation, and it will be, and it always will be, is to not only be aware of my power to control how much oxygen is in within me, but allow myself to utilize that power. And it can be As simple as not responding to a catty comment that someone makes. Or perhaps you shared some really conscious discussions with your family this past Thanksgiving. I noticed that a lot of people this year decided not to go Black Friday shopping, which is really, it makes me find solace. And I know that a lot of people who chose to go Black Friday shopping like supported local businesses, which is really cool. So that's an endearing faction or fact about us too, is that's the reality of life, is that every moment we're in school, right? We're evolving at every chance we get. And if you don't think of things happening to you, but instead things happening for you, that's very empowering. And a lot of us have this notion that things in our life happen for a reason. You know, we hold on to that notion, oh, this happened for a reason. But do you know the reason? My idea is that things happen to you and for you so that you can choose to grow from them. They're life lessons. They're literally lessons, and you can go, I don't like this, or oh my God, I love this. Okay, how do I want to let this affect me? Or, ooh, I don't want to do that. Or this reminds me of this time. So if you allow yourself to be open to receive the lessons that are present to you, it could mean so much to you. And perhaps it could take away this weight of trying to be. You know, a lot of us are trying to be. What are you trying to be? And I think that I talk about this every Black Friday because it's so blatantly demonstrated throughout our culture. It's just, we're all just swarming like insects drawn to light to these consumerism tendencies only because it's what we know, it's ingrained in us. But there's so much more than that. It's, we're not choosing who to be. We're not choosing how to be. We just are being according to calendar. And that's not fair. I watch so many people who are capable of amazing things try and fit into a mold. And we're not all supposed to fit into a mold. Like Derek and John were saying, just because we share geography with somebody doesn't mean we have to share their same ideas. Just because you're in America doesn't mean you have to go buy a bunch of crap today. It doesn't. And I hope everybody had a safe Black Friday. And I hope you guys enjoyed what I read to you. And I'm sorry to miss you guys last week, but everybody gets sick once in a while. And I'm gonna try and read to you guys some more of this book. There's a really important chapter called Are We All One? Collectivism versus individuality kind of goes along with what we were talking about just now. And let's see here. It's really exciting time to be alive because a lot of new data and science, especially in the quantum field, has supported the notion that we all are all one, especially in the sense that, like I was explaining to you guys earlier, our thoughts are vibrational patterns that we can literally monitor. But we have demonstrated via science that those thoughts can travel long distances and defy what we thought were sound scientific laws. And if your energy is not only in your body, you're not stuck within that being. Imagine what we could do as a society. So, we are all one. It's a phrase often spoken in spiritual circles to describe an interconnectedness of all life on the planet, human, plant, animal, insect, and beyond. Many anarchists who value their individuality and free choice tend to be apprehensive about the seemingly collectivist worldview. However, it is possible for one to believe in a path that is in harmony with nature and its creatures, while simultaneously believing in the right to be a free individual and freedom of association. Throughout most of the world, people are taught to look at reality in a very polarized way. When certain issues are presented to us through mainstream circles, they are usually oversimplified to the point of being a black or white concept. All people are either good or bad, with no in-between. In reality, life is much more complicated than that. There are usually many different ways of looking at any situation and many different sides to any story. This is especially true in the study of philosophy, because terms are consistently being redefined and ideas consistently re-examined with every new generation of philosophers to accommodate the new insight and information that has become available over time. One concept that is vastly misunderstood and oversimplified by the general population is the belief of individualism and collectivism. While there are many different ideas about what these words mean, the true value of any concept is determined by the consequences that arise in society as a result of its implementation. At face value, collectivism has been a philosophy with cherry rhetoric, but horrible outcomes because it has traditionally been implemented coercively through politics. Collectivist philosophers have spoken of noble goals like making sacrifices for the group and working together and cooperating. They have said that these are things that people should do. It very well may be true that people should behave in these ways, but the problem is that politicians come along and use this philosophy as a way of telling people what they must do. The mainstream stereotype of an individualist is someone who is a selfish person with no desire to participate in the community at all. The contrasting view of a collectivist is someone who cares about the tribe as a whole so much that they are willing to sacrifice their own well-being for the sake of the tribe. Individualism has nothing to do with selflessness. It simply is a way of looking at people without separating them into various groups by race, nationality, gender, religion, or social status. When people are seen as groups instead of individuals, large numbers of people are often held responsible for things that individuals among them have done. There is also a great danger in the idea that an individual needs permission from the group to exercise his or her own free will, which is exactly the type of worldview on which collectivist concepts like democracy and consensus were built. We have often found that well-meaning, spiritually inclined individuals buy into New Age messages that operate under the guise of helping out the whole human species. This could be a small group of wealthy individuals promoting a reduction of the population or forced sterilization for the supposed good of the whole. An anarchist pursuing some modern spiritual material might be turned off by the prevalence of status and collectivist language. Compassionate individuals may find themselves wrapped up in philosophies that claim to be about a greater good but end up harming the individual, thus the community as a whole. Anarchists may be so independent they completely ignore the importance of community and turn away those who want liberation for all. It is time to recognize each individual as a sacred being. To respect the whole, we must first respect the individual. For an individual to be truly free, he or she must not have physical obligations to anyone else. Rather, an individual must be able to freely choose who to interact with in a meaningful and peaceful way. In this manner, he or she can then become truly fulfilled and free. At the very least, mutual respect for other free individuals' life choices will go a long way. One of the most powerful examples of interdependence comes from the Avatamsaka Sutra of the Mahayana Buddhist philosophy. The Huayin, or Flower Garland School of Mahayana, was founded on the ideas expressed in the Avatamsaka Sutra, also known as the Flower Garland Sutra, or Flower Ornament Scripture. This sutra centers on the ideas of interdependence and an interpenetrating reality. It describes worlds upon worlds overlapping and coexisting with each other. Ooh. This concept is best expressed in the story of the jeweled net of Indra. Indra was a god who was said to possess a net that extended infinitely in all directions. The net contained individual shimmering diamonds that spread out in all directions. Each individual's diamond was perfect in its own, but the individual pieces also reflected the beauty of light of the surrounding diamonds. Renowned translator of Eastern texts, Thomas Cleary describes the beauty of the tale of Indra's net in his book, Entry into the Inconceivable. He writes, "The seventh gate is called the realm of Indra's net. The net of Indra is a net of jewels. Not only does each jewel reflect all other jewels, but the reflections of all the other jewels in each jewel also contain the reflections of all the other jewels, an infinitum. This infinity of infinities represents the interidentification, there we go, an interpenetrating of all things and illustrated in the preceding gates. To illustrate the net of Indra principle with a simplistic example from an everyday life, we might consider the cost of a commonality as representing a nexus of various conditions. For the sake of simplicity, let us say the cost of something reflects the cost of raw materials, the cost of energy required for its manufacture, the cost of labor involved in its production, and the cost of transportation for distribution. Turning our attention to raw materials, the first element, we can see that the cost of raw materials also involves the cost of energy required for their extraction, the cost of labor involved in their extraction, and the cost of transportation, the cost of transportation of the raw materials to the processing site. The cost of energy involves the cost of raw materials from which the energy is produced, as well as the raw materials for the devices involved, cost of labor involved in its producing energy, and the cost of distribution of energy. The cost reflects the cost of labor, reflects the cost of goods, energy, and transportation necessary for the workforce. The cost of transportation involves the cost of material, energy, and labor necessary to manufacture and operation of transportation systems. Thus, each element in this analysis reflects and contains every other element. While this example is rudimentary, using an oversimplified scheme of analysis and stopped at only one level of sub-analysis, it illustrates how the net of Indra concept may be applied to the development of a balanced view of a complex of a phenomena. The analytic framework may be usefully applied in economics, social economics, groups of individual psychology, and ecology. While it may be said that the net of Indra does not necessarily reveal anything startlingly new, it is, after all, merely an articulation of a principle inherent as an interdependent nexus of phenomena. Still, it is a valuable instrument for the achievement of balance and depth in understanding, and moreover, the avoidance of one-sided views. Phew. So, since we share this planet with billions of humans, animals, plants, stones, rivers, and countless other life forms, it is advisable to find ways to work together. We are connected through DNA, through our energetic bodies, and through our current position in time and space. By learning to value and love ourselves, we can move to a place of valuing and loving those with whom we share our local and global communities. What a concept, eh? So, basically, this awesome tale of Indra's net is basically another perception of my perception, and one that is shared by a lot of people. And it's not easy to do. It certainly isn't, but I encourage you guys to do it, because it is a truth of the universe and more sacred than anybody could ever teach you. And that is, if you find power within your being and you find love and sacred energy that is flowing through your being as a result of your willpower, you will literally be untouchable. And we need more untouchable people in this world, not only living in their truth and in their validity as sovereign beings, but encouraging others to do the same. Because when you encounter those type of people, they do nothing but lift you up and encourage you. Another notion from the philosophy bank of my mind is that there are only three types of interactions you can have with anybody that you encounter. And this can help you sort through your particular life school lessons. And that is interaction type one. So you meet somebody and you guys have a mutual exchange. You build each other up. You have a nice flow of energy where nobody's taking anything from one another. You're only reciprocating. And nobody leaves drained, nobody leaves tired, but you feel good, you feel amazing. And you want to be around those types of people. You crave them. And you can tell when you're in their company. You feel inspired and you feel happy and you feel really connected and grounded. And part of being inspired and connected is that you come up with all sorts of ideas, right? Often epiphanies, and that's your truth. That's what's true to you. So do more of that. And the second type is, you get around somebody and you feel it. You feel drained. You unexpectedly are even nauseous. You may get back pain. You may feel like you're going to vomit. Like you may actually vomit. And these people, they're sick in the sense that they are just stuck in a rut. And we've all been there. That's how we know how it feels. And they just can't get out of it. And being around them is, it's not reciprocal. They literally drain you. And you don't want those types of relationships, not even a little bit. And opposite to that, the third type is one where you give. And one's the giver, and they are the one suffering the taking. But if we can all have a coexisting relationship and give to each other, who knows? Happy Friday. Love you all. Catch you on Monday.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.